Hi, everyone. Welcome to EHS, this week's podcast for the week ending October the 3rd. I'm Nicoleta Cunha.
And I'm Allison Greinke.
And we're bringing you the latest stories in environmental health and safety. So I'm going to start off with a story in the oil and gas industry. So a new safety survey from Dräger has captured frontline workers and safety managers' personal perspectives on the state of safety within the oil and gas sector. So the survey included viewpoints of 129 current and former safety managers and frontline workers about the leading challenges in maximizing the industry's safety potential on four issues. So complacency, training, communication, and a bottom-line focus. The two-part survey revealed a consensus among frontline workers and safety managers that they believe the industry as a whole is committed to safety. The majority of frontline workers, so 69%, and safety managers, 61.9%, feel their current or previous employers often consider their safety, as well as provided the necessary training and equipment. However, survey responders agree that there is room for improvement, with two-thirds of safety managers ranking their current or previous safety culture as medium, while only one-third identified it as strong. But according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, an oil and gas worker is killed on average every 3 days, so it indicates the need to improve the industry's safety record.
So what are the leading safety roadblocks?
So there's actually four, but first is worker complacency. So the survey showed that worker complacency is one of the greatest inhibitors to safety. Part one of the survey, which involved speaking with 50 safety managers, revealed that 18% of safety managers believe it to be the most significant roadblock to safety. And more than half of frontline workers said they do not bump test their gas detection devices in accordance with the recommended OSHA guideline prior to each day's use. So only 28% conduct it once a week, 8.7% twice a month, and 6.5% at their discretion, while 28.3% didn't know and 4.3% never perform a test. So the majority of safety managers, 61.9%, conduct bump tests prior to each day's use, despite monitoring workers who often do not follow this recommended behavior. The second leading safety roadblock is training. So the safety survey found that more than half of safety managers are somewhat to not satisfied with the frequency of safety education and training occurring at their current or most recent work site. The third major roadblock to safety is communication. The survey showed both frontline workers, 93.5%, and safety managers, 95.2%, speak up when they observe a colleague deviating from a safe practice. But while workers speak up when an unsafe practice or procedure occurs, the survey revealed that the lessons learned may not be passed around the worksite, especially following a life-threatening incident. So nearly 43% of safety managers felt they were only sometimes or rarely informed when an incident that posed an imminent threat to a worker's life occurred, where 56.5% of frontline workers felt they were sometimes, rarely, or never told. And fourth is bottom-line focus. Many survey participants believe that companies' need to maximize productivity while reducing costs can sometimes come at the expense of worker safety. Productivity pressure was ranked as the leading cause to preventing a stronger commitment to safety. And to maximize the industry's safety achievements, the survey suggested that companies showcase their passion for their employees' well-being from the top down. So when companies invest in their people by equipping them with the right technology and training, their people will reward them by maintaining a safe worksite. So to find out more on this topic, you can check out the resources section.
I have a story from NIOSH now. NIOSH's Health Hazard Evaluation Program is planning a new study of hazards facing e-scrap recycling workers. E-scrap recycling is actually a pretty interesting industry. It's relatively new, and it's arisen out of good intentions and a desire to not pollute our environment with electronic waste. Especially these days when technology evolves so quickly, there's an incredible amount of electronic equipment becoming obsolete every year. Planned obsolescence also contributes greatly to the increasing amount of electronic waste. So some estimates put the amount of e-waste produced each year at about 50 million tons, and the EPA has estimated that somewhere between 15 to 20% of this e-waste is currently being recycled. However, electronic scrap, or e-scrap, can contain a lot of very dangerous contaminants, including lead, cadmium, beryllium, and brominated flame retardants, and so the process of attempting to recycle this e-waste is also very dangerous.
So what's the goal of NIOSH's study?
Well, NIOSH is hoping to find 5 e-scrap recycling facilities to participate this fall. They want to go into these facilities to observe work processes and practices, evaluate the exposure controls, and evaluate the employees' health. So a team of industrial hygienists and medical officers would be involved, measuring the exposure to flame retardants and to metals such as lead and cadmium. There's no cost to the facilities to participate in this study, and the findings and recommendations would be shared with the facility's employers. The findings would also be shared on NIOSH's Health Hazard Evaluation Program website. So for more information about this NIOSH program, you can visit their website by following the link in the resources section of this podcast. And Nicola, you have a story for us coming from the CDC.
Yes, so fall has begun and so has flu season. So the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Foundation, also known as the CDC, is sharing information to help workers protect themselves from the disease. The CDC released an infographic with facts about the vaccination, how the flu impacts workers, and how to avoid spreading germs, which you can find a link to in our resources section. Annually, 5% to 20% of North Americans contract the flu, resulting in $10.4 billion in medical bills and $16.3 billion in lost wages. Nearly 60% of reported flu hospitalizations are adults from 18 to 64, the general age range of workers. So the agency shares the following tips for employees to prevent against the flu. So first, get vaccinated each year. Second, encourage others to get vaccinated. Avoid contact with people who are sick. Stay home from work when you are sick. And cover your mouth and nose when coughing or sneezing. So hopefully if you follow these tips, you can avoid getting the flu this season. Now, Allison, I think you have a story on pollutant reporting.
Yeah, so this Wednesday, the Commission for Environmental Cooperation released the 14th edition of their Taking Stock report. This new international study features a multi-year examination of industrial pollution in Canada, Mexico, and the United States. So the Commission on Environmental Cooperation is the environmental watchdog that was created by the North American Free Trade Agreement. And in order to put this study together, they had to analyze data from more than 35,000 industrial facilities across Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. Their study recorded all reported pollutant releases in these three countries between the years of 2005 and 2010. The Commission on Environmental Cooperation is the environmental watchdog that was created by the North American Free Trade Agreement. And in order to put this study together, they had to analyze data from more than 35,000 industrial facilities across Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. Their study recorded all reported pollutant releases in these three countries between the years of 2005 and 2010, regardless of whether the pollutants were in the water, air, landfills, recycling sites, or disposal facilities. That's a lot of data to analyze, and the report definitely makes some interesting observations, but its discoveries are very limited by the differences between how and when companies in these countries are required to report pollutants.
What are some of these differences?
Well, each country has a different body that collects this data called a Pollutant Release and Transfer Register, or a PRTR for short. Each of these PRTRs have been around for different periods of time. So the U.S. has had this kind of mandatory reporting of pollutants in place since 1987. Canada's PRTR, on the other hand, has been around since 1993, and Mexico's PRTR in 2004. Each country requires different sectors to report and exempts certain other sectors. And the three countries don't all require reporting on the same pollutants. So, for example, the U.S. PRTR, which has been around for more than 25 years, requires data on almost twice as many chemicals as Canada. However, certain sectors are exempt from this reporting, including the energy industry and publicly owned power companies. Mexico's PRTR, on the other hand, has been around for just a decade and includes fewer chemicals and fewer sectors than either Canada or the U.S.
What are some of the discoveries of the study?
Well, the reports show that pollutant releases and transfers reported by North American industrial facilities increased 14% over the study's six-year span. It's important to note, however, that this increase doesn't necessarily represent an increase in pollutants, but instead an increase in reporting of pollutants. In fact, the biggest reason for this increase, according to the report, is the Canadian regulatory change that required companies to begin reporting releases of certain chemicals that are associated with oil and gas extraction and metals mining. The change resulted in the number of reported pollutants released into the land by more than double. So this includes things like tailings ponds that had previously not been reported on. In fact, the results seem to suggest that government regulation and changing public attitudes are resulting in less pollutant releases. They say that tougher rules for fossil fuel-powered electricity generation in the U.S. are the main reason why reported releases to air decreased by 36% during this period of time between 2005 and 2010. Other types of releases and transfers, including releases to water, also decreased over those 6 years. Pollutants released to water decreased by about 5% from 2005 to 2010. So it's good to see the numbers moving in the right direction. And if you'd like to take a look at the full report yourself, you can find a link in the resources section of this podcast.
Thanks, Allison. So I have a story about a safety work week that's coming up. So the Network of Employers for Traffic Safety is encouraging employers to improve their safety culture as part of Drive Safely Work Week happening next week, October 6th to 10th. The Drive Safely Work Week is aimed at helping employees travel safely, whether they drive as part of their job or simply commute to and from the workplace. As part of the campaign, NETS has developed a toolkit containing strategies for developing and sustaining safe driving programs. So if you're interested in checking out that toolkit, you can find it in our resources section. Joseph McKillips, chairman of the NETS board of directors, said that regardless of the reason for the trip, time spent behind the wheel is very likely the most dangerous part of an employee's day. So if your organization's safety programs don't currently integrate policies, procedures, communication tools, and/or practices related to safe driving for all employees, Drive Safely Work Week could be your opportunity to introduce these concepts. So definitely check out that toolkit and see what you can implement into your own safe driving program for your employees. And I think that's it for the week. Hope you enjoyed this week's stories, and we'll talk to you next week.
Have a safe week, everyone.